This week on the show, we're discussing Highgarde and whether it will survive much longer. The shadow-dropped 2D God of War Sons of Sparta game may be falling a little short of expectations. And the PlayStation 6, how much longer we may need to wait until launch. Harry, you also have some previews and reviews to splice in there too. But I'm your host, Ewan, and I'm joined today by my fellow gamers and co-hosts, James.
Hello.
And Harry.
Hello.
This is the Press Start Podcast, our weekly video game discussion podcast. Let's get on with the show. Alright, let's start with the troubles surrounding Highgarde. Following a round of layoffs at Wildlight as Highgarde's playbase dropped dramatically post-launch, former tech artist Josh Sobel has taken to Twitter blaming gamer culture and rage-baiting for the game's lackluster launch. Speculation that the game would imminently go offline spiked after the website went online. A dev in the game's official Discord has since clarified that it's being transferred and simplified, but is a low priority as they work on game updates instead. James, maybe first to you, as I know you've played a little bit of Highgarde. You and I played a little bit in the kind of day or two after launch. What do you think is the case or the cause for this game's apparent failure at launch?
I think it's a mix of things. Like, I genuinely do feel... you just winced. Is my voice still too loud? Ewan?
Did I wince? No, yeah. Truthfully, I felt like I heard dripping water in the background of someone.
I feel like I heard that too, but it wasn't me. I thought it was somebody else.
Does someone have a shower running in their background, or am I imagining things?
No, I don't know. Nah, there's a lot going on. It's a hot day.
Okay.
It's just ball sweat dripping, maybe. I just heard it again, but it's not me. I think it's... Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I don't think it's me, but yeah.
Okay, someone, all right. We'll carry on.
Highgarde. I think it was a mix of things. Like, I think the I fucking hate people who pile on, but I think people love a pile on, especially in the way of, like, Concord and stuff like that. But I also feel like, on the other end of it, to be fair, I do feel like this genre and this... I don't want to say genre. I guess this style of game. Like, this game was definitely doing its own thing, but it was, at the same time, kind of aping things from everywhere, and I did feel like it wasn't really a master of anything kind of situation. Master of none situation, as they say. So I do think it's a mix of things. I do think with this kind of game, like, your launch really makes or breaks you now, and I think the launch was a pretty, like, there wasn't a lot of characters. You could change your base and stuff, but it wasn't clear how, it wasn't quite obvious where you should pick which base, you know? And I think those things probably come with time, but I don't know. I just feel like everything this game did that was unique was not enough to kind of make it stand out. I admittedly enjoyed playing with you, Ewan, but, like, I also had no desire.
Thanks for saying that.
Just admittedly.
you're welcome. You're welcome. I begrudgingly enjoyed playing with you, I should have said. But I had no desire to return to it. Like, I don't know. Like, it just...
Yeah. I was in the same spot. I was, as much as I enjoyed playing with you, James, it didn't get its hooks in me, and I wasn't feeling the... temptation to kind of dive back into it. That being said, like, it just happened my brother came back from overseas and we were, like, eager to play a game together, so, like, the kind of party chat reassembled, if you like, and we were big Apex Legends fans, so we thought, let's give this another go, and it clicked. It did finally sort of click, and now I'm pretty addicted to it, to the extent where if we weren't podcasting right now, it's 100% what I'd be playing, and there's plenty of other games I wouldn't mind getting to as well. But yeah, I think the reason why it maybe struggled a bit at launch is the momentum just really kind of never swung in the right direction for it. I don't think the game does a great job of, like, onboarding players. I think, you know, it has that tutorial, and the tutorial is deliberately, I think, as brief as it can be whilst teaching you the systems and the game mode. Because it wants to get you into the action quite quickly, but then you're thrown straight in with other players, and I think it's hard to kind of get a handle of how the game flows whilst you're kind of coming up against people that have already acquainted themselves with what they're doing. I would have loved there to have been, like, your first game or two, you're pitted against bots or something, just to get a bit of a feel for it, which is what Fortnite has later introduced.
I feel like there's other games where you have, like, you have to play 10 matches and it's always the same, like it's a beginner's play.
Yeah, and they, like, gradually kind of feed in real players or something.
Yeah. And then it puts you into, like, the real world with real people.
Yeah, and it's also tricky as well when the player base is still quite small, which I think is like working against it at the moment, right? Like on console, you're being pitted against PC players. Chances are they're loving the game and have played a bit of it already. It's a bit of a struggle. That being said, like I also really, I think there is kind of a point to be made as former tech artist raises from Wildlight, in that it kind of becomes the easy social win to like put out some content that is just like hating or like dogpiling on a game like this, and it's kind of sure to attract some engagement, and that kind of irks me the wrong way. Like I wish people would give this like a fairer go than they have. I don't particularly want to say, hey, game developers, if you're launching a game like this, like seed it out to a bunch of creators first so that they can kind of do a bunch of positive press and like word of mouth for your game. I don't particularly want to get to that state, but I can see the temptation to do that sort of thing when it's really like word of mouth on social platforms that makes or breaks the launch of these games. You know, Call of Duty make a big feature of it now. Like when they have a new game coming out, they invite like a bunch of streamers to Vegas or wherever they're doing it. Yeah. And they do like a big kind of, I don't know, create a day or whatever they call it. I kind of get why they do that, because that like kind of groundswell seems so crucial to the successful launch of a game like this.
They did do this though, I think a few days
for Highguard.
I think a few people played it. Like I don't think it was heaps, but there was definitely people playing it a few days before, and a lot of those people were positive. I mean,
Was it the kind of people that are like making TikTok videos and putting out clips and stuff though?
Like, I mean, I'm not even. I don't feel like TikTok, I saw any. So I don't know. You tell me. You've got.
I think it was mostly press,
pulse.
But it was very selective in who got invited.
Yeah.
I feel bad for them because I do think Jeff was probably trying to give them a really big up by like closing the Game Awards with it. But I think the expectation that comes with that.
Yeah,
it's mixed with the current climate for online multiplayer games.
Yeah,
kind of didn't create a good situation for this team and this game. Like, and I think
that situation almost exemplifies the dogpiling as well. Like, it gives people like further reason to sort of get onto it. I think one other thing that really didn't help it as well is that everyone was hating on Marathon, and then Bungie were like, right, we're going to delay it. So they did, and everyone forgot about Marathon, and then this became the next thing. Like,
And they kind of like really stuck to that release date of less than a month away.
And didn't really say anything about
the
game.
Not even like just little tweets about like abilities or something. Yeah. Like there was literally nothing about the game until it came out.
It's a pity that they didn't kind of stick to their guns and like hanged that original kind of release strategy that they had. Like I totally understand. Like Jeff Keighley comes knocking, he tells you he loves the game, wants to make it like the closer for the Game Awards, or it was the Game Awards, wasn't it? That's a huge opportunity, and you'd be kind of silly to turn that down. But yeah, people are expecting something, they know something, they're anticipating some big thing. So like a new IP, particularly a live service kind of free to play game like this, it's just kind of like the perfect storm for a dog pile. What frustrates me is like in none of this have we discussed like the quality of the game and like the fact that has, and it's kind of besides the point, which is just a really shitty circumstance. So, I don't know. I've really gotten into the game, and I'm, like, now terrified that it's going to disappear. if you haven't yet given it a go, I encourage you to fire it up, like, play a few matches, give it a go.
I think it's too late.
But it might be too late.
Like, the whole team's gone. They can't even...
They go to the PlayStation Store, and it's gone.
Well, it sounds like they're running, like, a skeleton crew at the studio just to add some more content, but I'm like, is new content going to help you get there? I don't know.
I feel so bad, because, like, people would have worked on this for ages and loved it and stuff, and especially these people have, like, very strong pedigrees and stuff. You would have thought it was maybe in the bag. Because I do think it's a cool idea. I think some really good games lately are ones that kind of ape from other games in a way.
And do other things. I do wonder how or if it would have performed differently if it had shadow dropped like on the Game Awards day after they revealed it.
Maybe they would have closed it and just released it there and not give people
the time to talk about and dogpile on and be like, where's the marketing. People just would have tried it out and played it right off the excitement, but instead, you know, it was like almost 2 months of nothing, so like people forgot about it or they were dogpiling. Like, Yeah.
I also do think, like, art direction really kind of holds this game back a little bit as well, which is not, like, a knock against it in terms of...
I agree.
I don't know, it looks the same. Technical presentation of it, but everything. it just looks kind of the same.
Yeah.
If you're kind of doing stylized characters now, like, it's just kind of been done. Like, I think you need to do something really quite novel and distinct to Unreal kind Engine of cut 5. Through. What's that, sorry?
Unreal Engine 5.
It's back. I don't know if you've been keeping up, Harry, but this is James's pet peeve at the moment. Unreal Engine 5, he just has a distrust of.
Yeah, fair enough.
Consider this my personal appeal to jump in and give Highgarde a go. I lost Concord. I was on the record for liking Concord. Did I think it was the greatest game of all time? Of course not, but I didn't think it deserved to die the death that it did, and I don't want history to repeat itself. So
well, maybe you can go 3 for 3 with Marathon then, huh?
Yeah, Marathon's probably the next one that I'm gonna be personally appealing for.
They just, like, I don't know. I think the core message here is just try a fucking game instead of, like, just shitting on it online.
Yeah,
form like your own opinion. Take a bit of time to render an opinion. Don't just, like, base your opinion on some...
And that's somebody some who, like, puts my opinion out feed. On a video game every week. Like, I'm just like, please listen to other people. Like,
especially if it's free as well. Like, there's no excuse to at least not try. I understand with a game like, you know, Marathon or Concord, there was a premium attached to that and you don't want to have to, like, risk it being shut down or whatever and navigate refunds and so on, but like Highgarde's literally free. Like you can give the game a crack before you need to ape whatever you saw on like Twitter or Facebook or whatever wherever else. Like
and like maybe you're gonna get a little clowned out on the first round or so, but like just get a little squad together, all give it a go together and give it a few games, and I reckon you'll quickly find yourself in a fight or two that becomes pretty climactic. I'm like just having these great like matchups and tense battles, and I don't think the game is like quite well designed in its different phases. Anyhow, I'm starting to get on a pedestal. Let's catch up now though on the PlayStation 60 Minute State of Play that they hosted in the week. Of the announcements, one that attracted the most attention was the original God of War trilogy getting a remake, and the shadow drop of the 2D God of War Sons of Sparta. The latter of the two has particularly divided fans, with even the creator and director of the original game, David Jaffe, getting involved, blasting it, I think it's fair to say, in an online video criticizing its design, story, gameplay, art direction, and voice acting. So pretty much everything to do with the game. Harry, first to you. I know you've been busy playing a number of things. We're going to get some of those later in the show. But have you had a chance to play any Sons of Sparta or like given it much of a look yet?
Yeah, I think I've played probably about 5 or 6 hours. A fair chunk. I would say it's like good. Just good. I don't think it's like I think I maybe had higher expectations because this project was like leaked and rumored for ages that there was this like 2D Greek God of War game, and it was supposedly a Metroidvania, and obviously that sort of paints pictures in your mind about what it could be, and obviously thinking about like Prince of Persia and stuff, the Lost Crown, like I was like, oh, we could have sort of another, and I want to be very clear, I don't think this game is bad, and I think the pricing is fine because it's seemingly pretty long. It's just not like particularly great. Like there's a lot of small nagging issues that I have with it, and like I don't think it really plays to the strengths of the genre, but like I mean it's still decently fun. It's fairly challenging, which I enjoy.
I think it's like very like it's clearly inspired by kind of these retro sort of 2D action platformers of the past, and it is quite different, I guess, to like what I was hoping it would be in like a 2.5D sort of Metroidvania, like Prince of Persia: Lost Crown. Like, that would have been my dream. It's not that, and so that like initially kind of disappointed me. But that being said, the more I've played it, the more I've enjoyed it. Like it kind of, you know, reminds me of like the earlier Castlevania games, kind of in its combat and its approach. But yeah, you're right. It's kind of, I think David Jaffe's far too critical of it. I would say it's like necessarily a mid game. It's just maybe not quite a great game, which is obviously
nuts, man.
Sure, yeah.
I would say if it like goes on sale for like $20 or whatever, it's well worth it. Like, and yeah, it's seemingly, I think it's like 12-ish hours. Like, it's not a short experience. And it's
no.
Like four, was it 45 AUD or something?
Yeah, I was going to say, I reckon yeah. I might have played like 8 hours of it already. And maybe a bit more. And I still feel like there's plenty for me still to do. So, yeah. And some of the boss fights get really quite tough as well.
Yeah, it's like, it's fairly hard.
They're occupied. James, can you see yourself giving it a go?
No. It doesn't, like, I wasn't dying to know this story, first of all. Like, I think it's a wholly unnecessary story, for one. But I also feel, I don't know, the art just doesn't, I feel like these games live or die on their art a lot, right? Like, and I don't know, like, to me it's quite generic looking.
It's not my favourite art style.
No. Yeah, like, I think they could have done a bit better there. When games like, I mean, what was that other one? I know the game was shit, but I think Apoptos, it was called, or something.
Ultros? Is that what you mean?
No. There was a game on PlayStation. It had, like, it looked like the side of those, like, Greek vases. Do you know what? I'm trying to remember what it was.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I remember this. I don't remember the name, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I just think of stuff like that.
That would have been
a cool style. Apotheon. There we go. From 2015. Yeah. Like, something that kind of vibe, I think, would fit perfectly here. Alternatively, I would have loved if they'd maybe explored. I know it was rumored for a long time, like Egypt was a thing. I feel like you could maybe get past the fact that the art was a bit boring if it was a new setting for like Kratos and Co.
Yeah.
But
that could have been really cool if it was almost like hieroglyphic kind.
Yeah, do you know what, like, I mean? Like, style. I just feel like in terms of, like, if you're going to approach God of War, like, give God of War a different kind of thing to what people want. Let's, like, go the whole way and, like, not just do Greece again, but the boring part of Greece with, like, a generic art style. Instead, do something, like, wholly new. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, like, because, like, you don't... And then if it's a flop and people hate Egypt, you haven't wasted millions of dollars on this big game, like, that's in Egypt, you know? I don't know. That's just a thought.
Yeah, I think that's a real missed... That's a great idea and a missed, like, opportunity, because the game kind of starts with kind of Elder Kratos, like, telling a story, and it kind of then winding back to him as, like, a trainee Spartan. And yeah, like, maybe if it was, like, looked like it was scrolled on papyrus and, like, had kind of hieroglyphic sort of elements, or I don't know, something like that, that could have been really cool. But I feel like this kind of pixel art sort of style suits itself really well when you've got, like, big kind of bold kind of colors, but this kind of muted sort of brownness.
I dare say, I'm not saying that really it is. I'm not saying it is that, but I dare say it looks like AI. And I know it's not AI, but, like, it has that, like, that glaze over it that
I think makes what it holds it back a little bit there as well is that it's it kind of tells, like, a story that we haven't otherwise seen, and it's, like, not the Kratos we know. Like, it does feel like someone else's interpretation of the character in every sort of way. Which, look, I'm hardly the expert on all things God of War lore. I think that is a little bit of... I can see that holding people back from the game. It's like, well, this isn't what I love from God of War. This isn't the Kratos that I love. So it's a bit of a shame. I had kind of lofty expectations for this. It's... I don't know. There are Metroidvanias, i.e. this new Castlevania game that was announced that I'm far more excited for.
I think that's the other thing, is, like, there are so many Metroidvanias, like,
such a saturated genre now.
One, it's so saturated. The highs are really high. Like, Silksong, like, The Lost Crown, like, these are, like, points that people are going to refer to now.
Yeah.
Especially, like, with when you have a an IP like God of War. I don't know. It's hard to.
But even
to,
like,
sort of
you said before, you and, like, Ultros is another one. Memories in Orbit or whatever that just came out in January. Like,
Mio,
games that have, like, really cool, like, art and, like, kind of a unique take on combat. Obviously, Ori is a big one from years ago.
Yeah, I will say, like, if you've been tempted to kind of try out Metroidvanias and you don't have a lot of history with it, but you do God of War, like, this is kind of a nice endpoint because it does borrow a lot of the combat mechanics and, like, kind of skill trees and stuff of God of War. And it's not hugely reliant on parries and dodges. Like, yes, it is.
Can I, like, quickly ask, is it, like, a big open map? Like you get it, and you get abilities and backtrack and stuff, or is it just more? It is like that.
It is like that, but it's very linear.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think there's a huge amount of backtracking, and the backtracking is more so, oh, go back and get this collectible or this power up. It's not like it's not consequential to the progress.
Never really
of the game.
Feels like you're exploring. Like you get an objective, and it just marks it on the map for you. And
I can confidently say this is a Metroidvania. To be honest, like it's, I think it's more.
You couldn't confidently say.
I don't think like.
Yeah, I genuinely agree with you. Like, I think a lot of people see a 2D game that has, like, you know, a map, and they're like, oh, it's just like Metroid. It's like, no, there's like a lot more to, like, to me, a Metroid or a Castlevania.
Yeah, you're not going right just enough to get an ability that means you can go further left and so on. Like, it doesn't have that to it, I don't think. It's really just like, go get this collectible now that you've got this other ability.
Yeah, there's like one occasion in the 6 hours I played where like I've seen something that I'm like, oh, that's a progression item, but I can't get to that yet. I need to make a mental note and come back here, which like that for me is the most rewarding part of the genre is when you see something important and you're like, I've got to come back here with something. And that's only happened once in like 6 hours. So
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I can't confidently say, because it looks like it's kind of there and like little bits and pieces, but it's not central to the design of the game, it doesn't feel. Yeah. Anyhow, there's more to discuss from the State of Play. We haven't even covered off the remake of the God of War trilogy as well. Truthfully, like, my endpoint to God of War was the 2018? I wanted to say it was 2016. Thank you. I wanted to say it was longer ago than that. Kind of reboot of you, if you like. But I am excited to go back and kind of experience this trilogy. Do you think I've got a bit to be excited for, James, or is this going to be more of a straight-laced remake than
I'm the wrong person to ask, because I never loved these games. Like, I thought they were good, but I always felt like growing up with these games, the other games available were like Devil May Cry and Ninja Gaiden, and I felt
like you far more
mechanically, those games were just more interesting. Like, I think God of War was good because it didn't have the mechanical depth of those games, but it had that crazy spectacle, which I think now PlayStation is known for, right? But yeah, Ewan, like, I'm intrigued to know what this kind of, like, approach will be. Is this three separate games? Is it one big game? Like, I don't know how that's going to work, because the first three games...
Sorry,
we're quite meaty, and it's like, are they just going to be like the same style, like the top down ish Devil May Cry camera or Bayonetta camera?
Like, is it going to be like top down action or like over the shoulder, like the new
or are they like Capcom-y remakes where it's like the same game, but it's like so remixed to the point where it's basically a new game anyway? And if so, how fucking long is this going to take to come out? Like, given how long these games take to make from Sony, but I will say, Ewan, if you like that dragon battle in the first God of War, remember on the mountain?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
Like in the first Norse God of War. That, to me, was like the perfect like distillation of what the first three God of War games were like. Yeah. And I was always wanting more of that from the Norse games. And I got a bit more of that in Ragnarok. But if you like that big, epic kind of like, almost you're not playing the game, it's just it looks really cool, that's like, that is what the first three God of War games are like, and I think that will appeal to a lot of people, and I think it's a cool setting that is barely touched. I mean, I wouldn't want to say it barely touched on, a lot of games take place in ancient Greece now, but I think there's just the things that he fights and gets up to is really cool.
I'm interested
to see like the sex mini game, how that translates. I don't know if that's going to be if that's going
to
come back.
I feel like that's all anyone's wanted to talk about.
How
are they going to do the sex mini games?
I think it's gone. Like, honestly, or
maybe
more respectful. But how do you make a sex mini game respectful? I don't know.
I reckon there'll be like kind of a nod to it here or there, but I think I have to imagine they'll do something different with it. To your earlier point, Harry, I really do hope that they kind of give it the more modern treatment, like they kind of pivot to that.
So you want it over the shoulder?
Yeah, you will. No, I'm on the record. That's my kind of style of game.
Yeah, but like, you
can retell the story.
There's like a million other games like that. I feel like they should do. I don't know.
I have to say that I just love the combat. Disagree with you.
We can have a discussion.
not that that perspective is bad, but like, when they remake these games, I do not want them to make them over the shoulder like the new games are, and you've just got the Blades of Chaos, and like, you're just doing like light and heavy attacks. Like, I want like juggles and like executions and shit, like in the original trilogy, like sick quick time events and like crazy. And like, I think part of what made the spectacle cool in those games was the perspective. Like, you're on the top of a Titan and you can see like the whole hand of like Gaia or something, or Kronos, and you're like moving down their arms and fighting dudes. Like, it's it's really cool. Okay. And I think, I don't know, part of what little mechanical complexity there is and depth of combat there is would be watered down by making it over the shoulder and parries and whatever else.
That why then not just remaster it rather than remake it?
Well, that comes down because, to definitions, doesn't it? But
yeah,
because y'all won't fucking play something unless it's 4K. Like, and I can see the ass hairs of up Kratos' crack. Like, that's literally...
That's all what the sex mini care. Game is for, Jess.
Yeah. But like, yeah, I don't know. I think... I know what you're saying, Ewan. I actually wouldn't be surprised if this was more in line with the other games. But then I also feel like that wouldn't... I don't know. They're just so different. Like, the way the storytelling was...
from the perspective of someone that's not played these games. Don't forget that.
No, that's like, cool. Yeah.
I kind of thought they were all, like, a bit more hack and slash, whereas the kind of, like, visceral nature of the combat like, and, like...
Have you played Bayonetta or Devil May Cry? I can't remember. Or, like, Ninja like Gaiden
bits
at all?
And pieces, but...
Yeah,
not
they're basically
much
that
detail.
Style. Yeah. Of game,
yeah, like Dante's Inferno, traditional action games, but it's not as in depth as those are.
Yeah, see, I like the meatiness of the more recent God of War games.
I just think like those games are they're special because of that. If you want to say special, I feel like that word's doing a lot of heavy lifting, but you know what I mean. Like, I feel like that's what's unique about those two games. Like, let's like focus on the cool shit from the Greek trilogy for this remake. I don't know. But then I guess at the same time, I'm a hypocrite because RE2 remake, that's a very different game to like RE2 original, you know? So like...
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, look, I'm explaining my thinking, but you guys are starting to convince me that it would be like, maybe it's, let's respect the kind of mechanics and design of like the original games as well as the story.
Maybe they'll
and,
just be side-scrollers.
And just kind of find a way to kind of modernize that a little bit otherwise. Yeah. No, I'm excited because like my... referencing my brother again, he went back and played these games on the PS3 and loved them and has sworn by them and been constantly trying to get me to play them.
They hold up pretty
he
well.
He might have like, to wait a little bit longer because this game could be a while off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm eager to see what that story looks like given how much I now kind of love the world and the character. There's more to get to, though, from the state of play. I'm conscious how long we're already going. Amongst other announcements, there was Metal Gear Solid 5, the Master Collection Volume 2 announced, a new John Wick game, Silent Hill Townfall. We got a good look at that. Kena, Scars of Cosmora was announced, and Castlevania Belmont's Curse was also shown off. Harry, maybe first to you, what else took your fancy from the state of play? What's on your radar?
I think Marvel Tokon is looking really, really good. I know that there
shaping
was like
nicely.
Yeah, a lot of bits and pieces that people were like not super keen on in the most recent beta or whatever, and it seems like they're addressing a lot of the feedback. And the roster looks really sick and the character kits and stuff, so I'm really keen for that. Master Collection 2 for Metal Gear I'm excited for because I've still not played, only recently played 2 and 3. I'm looking forward to playing Peace Walker and 4.
Have you never played 4?
No.
Do you know anything about it? Like, do you know what happens?
Not a lot.
Oh my god, I'm so jealous.
Half of it
it's
is
like
cutscenes, but
it's just like batshit. Like it's again like another game we were talking about earlier before the show. Like, you just watch it and you can't believe what's happening. And it's just it's
I'm
cool.
Excited for that.
I think it's great. That it's not on PS3 before, and it's wild now. It's going to be on Switch 1. Like, I don't know how that port will run. It's probably the most authentic presentation because it was choppy as fuck on the PS3. So maybe on Switch, it's going to be the most authentic way to play it. But I think it's great. It's such a fucking mess of a game, but just such an important game because of that. So weird, but
I think Castlevania looks great. That was a big surprise. Yeah. That looks really cool. And really eager for Silent Hill. Like, again, like, it's so cool that Konami is just sort of leasing the license out to these studios and they're all doing their own thing. Like, it's really creative and it's really cool to see all these different takes on the property and like what different studios want to do with it. So
I was particularly impressed by the run like Konami had like with all of their announcements. But yeah, pleased to see them kind of giving some of their IP some love as well. And yeah, that Castlevania one did sneak into my fancy critic pick.
I don't know about that
this year.
It doesn't look like, I don't know. I know it's exciting. There's a new Castlevania, sure, but like to me, I didn't feel Castlevania from it. Like, is that wrong to say?
I think I get what you mean. Like the art style is very, it's quite saturated. It doesn't whip. Like it doesn't that's have not, the like,
that's not how it's
dark. Like, yeah.
But I don't know. I think to piggyback off you, did you guys watch the Silent Hill transmission afterwards? I don't think many people did. No. Yeah. That got me a lot more excited for Townfall than I already was. I kind of thought with the guys who did this game, they're like, they did Stories Untold, which was like mainly a text-based adventure, and that really scared the shit out of me. Like one of the scariest things I've ever read. So I was excited to see what they did, and I thought this would be a more indie take, but during the Silent Hill transmission, they confirmed it's like a full-length game, and that they went to like Scotland. It's like set in a Scottish fishing village and stuff, and I really like the vibe of that. I think it's a really cool setting, and then it's got these like kind of medical equipment undertones, if that makes sense. If you've seen the trailer, you know what I mean. I just hope it's not a retread of Silent Hill 2. I hope it's not somebody who's forgotten they did something bad and they remember it and then they get upset and then they're like, I really hope that they're doing something different there, because I think Silent Hill F was the proof that you can do something else that's not in Silent Hill.
But no, I thought that it looked really good. Yes. I love the setting. The setting looks awesome. I just hope I could psych myself up to play it. But we'll have to see. I'll get some friends over. It'll be fun. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to call out. Kena, I think, Scars of Cosmora. Like, that first game, I think, has a bit of a cult following. Truthfully, I didn't know if we were going to see another Kena game, but pleased that that is happening, and they seem to have like kind of built upon what they did in the first game in a number of ways too. So yeah, excited for that. I think Ghost of Yote Legends continue to shaping up really cool. Very, very excited for that as well. And Control Resonant too. Like, I know people are a little bit on the fence with it.
I don't know.
I really cannot wait for this game. And yeah, I think, I don't know. I'm not seeing what other people are seeing. Like, that whenever I see gameplay of this game, I think it looks sick, but apparently other people feel different.
What about Project Windless? We haven't talked about that.
Oh yeah, this is the chicken game.
Someone tweeted and called it Kentucky May Fry, and I love that. Instead of Devil May Cry.
That's great.
Incredible. I think that looks potential.
I'm surprised you feel that way. You're usually so critical of like just like another kind of,
because it's like kind of
high fantasy.
It looks like Devil May Cry. It looks like DMC rather than say like Black Myth or something. Like, I feel like it looks like a character action game, not like a Souls like game. If that
makes
sense.
There's not many of those around nowadays.
I mean, like, they're coming. Like that Tides of Annihilation. That looks the same.
That looks cool.
It looks cool too. What about Marathon, the launch trailer?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I think at least everything I've heard from the most recent closed beta they had, like, people were really positive on it. And they've got this big server slam next week as well, which is like open to all players. But yeah, I don't know. It's a hard sell given people play Ark Raiders and the price tag and stuff. But I don't know. It'll either go really well or not at all.
I think it was
going back to our earlier comments. I'm keen to give it a go, and I think the server slam is a good opportunity for it. I reckon that could be really make or break, to be honest. Like, I think people are kind of still curious, and maybe to see how they've adapted the game based on the feedback as well. And if people go in and have a great time, then awesome. But if they don't feel like their concerns are being addressed or people aren't gelling with it, I'd be really worried about the game thereafter. And truthfully, like, we ought to be worried about Bungie thereafter, given like the trouble that they've had. Destiny, there's already, I think, been around layoffs.
I saw today
as well.
They announced that they delayed so they're doing like small expansions. They do one every 6 months, and each expansion has a major update. And the second expansion, the Star Wars one, its major update, which was meant to come out next week, has been pushed back to June. So there's no new content from about, I think it was probably late December, until June, and the game is already in a really rough state. So yeah, I don't know what they're doing with Destiny.
So if
Marathon doesn't do well, I would be very, very, very concerned about what Sony does with them, whether that's like complete takeover or merging them into other studios or what have you. I don't know.
And it's a seriously scary prospect. Like, given this is the studio that brought us Halo, like, just how we've ended up here, boggles the mind a little bit. But yeah, I don't know. I'm continuing to be optimistic about Marathon. I haven't had a chance to play it at all yet, so it's kind of coming without any of the baggage, I suppose, that opinion. But yeah, given what we were saying about Highguard at the start of the show, I'm going to live up to that promise and dive in, give it a go, and form my own opinion on the game.
Also, Saras.
Also, really Saras.
Oh, yeah, Saras looks
continues
fantastic.
To look really good. Was that your pickup in Fantasy Critic, James? Saras?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. I think this state of play was actually quite good. I think, like, the only time I got bored was when Four Loop was on. Like, I think that game is just like, let's just move on from Left 4 Dead, please. But, yeah, I think overall, really solid. Probably the first time in a long time I've watched the whole thing and not been bored at all.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do like this kind of style props presentation. And I sort of feel like when the 60-minute sort of badge is attached to it, you know, to expect some heat as well. And like they're continuing to deliver on that. So very, very cool. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now, though, but we'll be back in a second to talk about one of the highest rated games of the year so far. All right, before we started recording the show, Harry, you mentioned that you'd been playing a lot of Mugenics. It's one of the year's best-reviewed games so far, with an 89 on Metacritic. I'm kicking myself slightly, because this is one I was tossing about picking up for Fantasy Critic, and I didn't. I just talked myself out of it for some reason. So I kind of went on a bit of an indie shopping spree after that, out of fear that this was going to happen again. But tell us about Mugenics, your thoughts on the game so far. What are you loving about it?
This game is absolutely consuming me at the moment. It came out on the 10th, and I think I picked it up then, and I have like 35 hours. So basically it's a roguelike, but it's a strategy RPG where you breed cats and you send them on, like, adventures, and you try to get them to the end of the adventure, essentially.
And when you say breed cats, there's a bit of a twisted element to that, right?
Yeah. You have this house, and, like, strays show up, you pull them in the house, and you start with one room, and you unlock more, and then you decorate with furniture, and furniture provides stats to each of the rooms. So, like, there's, like, comfort, which affects, like, how likely they are to breed. Stimulation, which like you're more likely to get a kitten with better base stats, and there's other stuff as well, but like the idea is like you're breeding cats so that they pass on their stats to a kitten, and you make a kitten that's better than either of those two cats, and you can pass on like active and passive skills, and later on you can get mutations that pass down as well. But the thing you have to be careful of is that you can inbreed these cats, and like there's different levels of inbreeding, but like, you know, you have like slightly inbred, and if you have a cat that's slightly inbred, they're probably fine. But when they're inbred or very inbred, they'll have like negative modifiers that decrease their stats. And like, if you get like a heavily inbred cat, you might as well send it to the junkyard. Like, you're not taking that on a run. But it has this loop of like, you give cats and kittens to NPCs to like improve your own runs and your house. So like there's this guy who takes kittens and he gives you breeding tips every like 10 kittens you give him. Or if you have a successful adventure, these cats come back retired, which means they can't go on a new adventure. So you might use them for breeding, or you can give them to Frank who lives in the sewer. And once you like give him 10 retired cats, he'll give you a new room. And then of course you can invest more in breeding. And this sounds ridiculous and like fairly simple, but like the amount of depth there is in like one breeding, but also like the runs and the way that you can build out your cats is like absurd. Like it's crazy. Like I just keep peeling back layers, and every time I feel like I've got a grasp, it introduces something new. I played 35 hours and my save file says I'm at 30% completion. So like it's probably about 100 hours, like at least.
Yeah.
It's so, so good. Like, I think it's worth mentioning so wacky, it.
Like,
but...
it's from the former Binding of Isaac devs, right?
Yeah,
so if you played that game, yeah, you know what to expect.
Yeah, same sort of humor. But, like, if you like XCOM or Fire Emblem and you enjoy roguelites, this is a must-buy. It's PC only at the moment, but it's coming to Switch 2. I think that's their first console port. But, yeah, it's probably my favorite game of the year so far.
Wow.
Yeah,
it's only game I've put like an hour or two into so far, but you got to get back to playing more of it. It's definitely, there's a twisted humor to it, but that suits me quite a bit. But you're right, like underneath like this kind of thick layer of zaniness, there is a really well-designed kind of game, not beneath it, but like it's very much kind of the forefront of the game, but definitely like wrapped up in this just like absolute absurdity. Does remind me a little bit of like Cult of the Lamb in the way that you're kind of like there's this almost like base building sort of element to it in between runs. And it's got like a similar kind of tone to it. Although there's maybe a like a more of a grossness factor with Mugenics. But it's like poking fun at Pokemon at the same time, and it's clearly borrowed a lot from games but poking a lot of fun at other ones as well.
And even if you don't like
it's very much its own thing,
even if you don't like McMillan's humor, like there are some other genuinely funny things that can happen. Like you can, like one of my cats got COVID and like was spreading COVID to the other cats in my party and to the enemies I was fighting. You can like breed them with two heads or like one that has a head on its tail. They can be bred with autism. And like the strays that show up, like are like typically pop culture references. Like there's one called Katsune Miku. And there's like, and it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. There's a cat, like Edmund McMillan, the lead dev, has a cat and he's got like a beard. And like, it's wild. It's wild. It's truly wild.
There's definitely like surprise and shock factor to it. But like, this is where a lot of the humor comes from as well.
So good. It's so good. I highly recommend checking it out if you like those sorts of games.
Yeah. And I think coming to Switch too is like the logical next step. It's not particularly friendly to a controller at this point in time. So I'm curious to see how easy the other ports come. But yeah, I'm sure it'll happen, hopefully before the year's out. You've also been reviewing a couple of other games. Let's maybe start with Yakuza Kiwami 3 and Dark Ties. What do you score that one and why?
I gave it a 6.5, I think. And the
on the lower side.
Yeah, it was on the lower side, and some of the consensus was around that mark as well. I think, like, the Kiwami remakes have been generally fine. Kiwami 1's probably the best. I think when they transitioned to the Dragon Engine, the combat system took a real hit in terms of complexity. That's kind of the same in 3. But here, they also make a lot of narrative changes. One, to support the new, like, added narrative content they have, which is Dark Ties, which follows the antagonist of 3. And like the retcon that they did to make this happen, it is like genuinely upsetting. I just wasn't a big fan of it. And I think that there's a lot of new things and tacked on additions that kind of betray the identity of the original game, which is kind of a black sheep in the broader franchise. And I think a lot of that has been lost in the modernization.
On a brighter note, though, you seemed pretty positive on Dragon Quest VII Reimagined. You scored that a bit higher. Why was that?
Yeah, I found DQ7 pretty enjoyable. I think I gave that an 8.5. It has a really great art style. Like it has they said it was sort of diorama inspired, and you can definitely see what they meant by that. Like it's a bit like Bravely Default 2, but more like higher fidelity, more detailed, etc. So it looks really great. It's significantly streamlined, which is kind of a double-edged sword, because if you're a purist, there's a fair bit of cut content. But 7 has always been very daunting for newcomers because it's like 100 plus hours.
Yeah.
So they've cut it down to about 50 here in a couple of different ways. I think it's a good way to experience DQ7 if you've never played it before. And, like, the older versions are, like, still pretty easy to find. Like, the 3DS remake is around, which is, like, probably the definitive version if you want to experience all the content. But, like, yeah, it's definitely a reimagining. And I think they like, adequately titled and marketed this game. Like, it's not a remake. It's the same game, but, like, restructured, repaced, and yeah, modernized, but in ways that I think are smart and, you know, most people will enjoy.
That's reassuring to hear, because I can imagine that's, like, quite a difficult balancing act to do, like trying to modernize and trim, I guess, the fat of a game without losing what people loved. Like, that's, yeah, you've got to be quite discerning in that, I suppose. But yeah, I love the term, like, reimagined. I hope we see kind of more. I feel like it's becoming increasingly common anyway. But yeah, I think that's kind of a good trend, one that I endorse. Yeah, and I'm pleased that you reviewed it as highly as you did for fans. This is another one that I think it would have maybe not counted for our rules for Fantasy Critic, but one that was tempting all the same. All right, before we close out the show with everyone's favorite podcast game show, What the Wiki, Ramageddon has struck again, with the ROG Ally getting a price hike, the Steam Deck experiencing production issues, and rumors now circulating that PlayStation have pushed back the launch of the PlayStation 6, potentially until 2029. My rapid-fire question for you two, then, is can you wait another 3 years for the next PlayStation generation? James, first to you.
Yes.
No hesitation.
What is this gen? It's so shit, first party wise, I feel. Do you not agree? Like, honestly, let's be real.
Like, well, I don't feel like we've had kind of really defining games for this generation just yet.
No. Like, what is it? Like, Demon's Souls, Spider-Man, Returnal to me is like, that is the defining game of this gen, and Souls will probably overtake that. Although Astrobot, I should give that credit.
We still haven't really transitioned into this generation because they're still releasing games on PS4 and Xbox One in a lot of cases. So, like, for me, like, it's fine.
Let's just really hone ourselves. Let's learn how to use Unreal Engine 5 properly and get our games running.
I know, the rising cost of everything at the moment as well. My bank account's like, we could wait. We could wait 3 years. That's fine. Yeah. take your time, Sony. Put in your orders for RAM and storage while you can. Now is time, though, for What the Wiki, the Press Start podcast game show where the previous week's winner reads part of a Wikipedia page for an unknown game, and we, the contestants, must guess the game. A point is awarded for each correct guess, with the round concluding after someone's bagged themselves 2 points. In the lead right now, we have James. He's on 8 points. He was last week's winner and will be hosting the show today. Shannon's on second place on 6 points. I am in third on 2. Quite a gap there. And then Harry and Brody are tied on 1 point apiece. Hopefully an opportunity for Harry and I to play catch up here. But James, as I said, you are last week's winner. You are in the hosting chair today. Take it away.
Yes, let's go. Now, there is a theme, but you won't guess it. And one of these games doesn't have a Wikipedia entry, so I had to go on a fan wiki, so I apologize.
Oh, wow.
Fan wiki.
Yeah.
You say we won't guess the theme, I'll just be happy if I guess the game.
Yeah.
I'll take that. That's correct. I'm not doing well this season.
Okay, let's go. This game's Melbourne-based studio has previously developed another music-themed platforming title. Cool. Developer XXX described the feel of the game as sort of like channel surfing old school MTV at 3 a.m. The title is soundtrack driven and features music from Devo, Smashing Pumpkins, Iggy Pop, Joy Division, and more. In the 1990s, teens Rockford, Slater, and Cassandra make their way to a party on the last night of high school, reminiscing about their teenage years together growing up in Northern California. The player controls Rockford, who has dreamed of being a music supervisor since she was 8 years old. The game is an upcoming narrative adventure game developed by Beethoven. Yes,
Ewan. Is this Mixtape?
It is Mixtape. Congratulations, Woo! Ewan.
I had no idea that was Melbourne developed.
There you go.
Wowee. I'm not paying enough attention.
No. When are you? Let's go. Speaking of, let's move on. Now, this is the fan wiki one, so I apologize. This game's story is set around a gladiatorial event known as the Heroic Games, which is hosted by a figure known as the Divine Sovereign, who promises to grant the wishes of the victors. The contest draws participants from all walks of life, and whose motivations and desires are just as varied. Returning from previous games are the classes Noble, Myrmidon, and Hunter, Combat Arts, Gambits, a Hub Area, Crests, and Weapon Durability. New classes include a Flying Rider and a Charioteer. The game is an upcoming 18th installment of this franchise and will be released on Nintendo Switch 2 in 2026. That's literally all I have, so I hope one of you gets it.
I'm so thrown off. Upcoming game with a fan wiki, 18th installment. Gladiatorial combat? Give us a clue.
It's a franchise. It's a first party game.
Shock horror.
I wasn't sure with 18 entries.
I'll give you a clue. It's been around since the NES.
Oh my god. This is a blind spot for me, James.
At the right.
Gladiatorial. Did you say gladiatorial comic? Can you start that, the first bit again?
The story of this game is set around a gladiatorial event known as the Heroic Games. That's not going to help you, though.
Heroic game. Okay, yeah.
I'm going to re-go to the series page on Wikipedia, because that's real, and read that, and that might give you some hints.
Oh. Right. Okay.
The core gameplay in this series revolves around discrete battles between the player's team of characters and non-player teams across grid-based maps. The player and enemy each take turns moving their characters across the map and have them perform combat-based actions. The games also feature a story and characters similar to traditional role-playing games, and occasionally social simulation aspects as well. A notable aspect of the gameplay is a permanent death of characters in battle, rendering them unusable upon being defeated, although this aspect of the game can be turned off starting from a certain game onwards. The series title refers to a recurring element usually portrayed as a royal weapon or shield representing the power of war and dragons. Guys, really?
It's just nothing happening in my head.
The series debuted outside of Japan with the seventh game. According to the game's director, this was because of the international success of a similar turn-based game from the same publisher. The inclusion of two characters in Super Smash Bros. Was also cited as a reason for the series' international release. Many games in the series have sold well, although the series has suffered a decline during the late 2000s.
Is it...
Harry?
Yes,
Harry.
You'd save me from embarrassment anyway.
It's not... Is it Fire Emblem Fortune's Weave?
It is Fire Emblem Fortune's Weave. Congratulations.
There are 18 Fire Emblem games.
Yeah, apparently.
I could not tell you a single thing about Fire Emblem. I'm aware it exists.
I was thinking Fire Emblem, starting to dawn on me that it was... Yeah.
There's actually more than 18, Harry, if you don't count like remakes and... If you count remakes and shit.
That's
and
nuts. Ports.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so
it started to occur to me it was going to be like a Fire Emblem or a Dragon's Quest or something like that, and I'm like, I know nothing about.
Yeah, I was thinking Fire Emblem, but then James said 18th. I was like, nah, can't be Fire Emblem.
Yeah, okay.
But then I would have been like, I know there's a Fire Emblem game coming out this year, but I don't know what it's called. That's where I was.
Okay, well, let's move on. The developer has added a new proprietary volumetric smoke system to their engine for this game, which it claims has not been done anywhere before. The game will also... Yes, Ewan.
Is it Valheim?
No. The game will also incorporate ray tracing and fully dynamic global illumination in its lighting model. The game is the first major game in its franchise following a long hiatus resulting from the critical and commercial failure of the last game in 2012, which saw publisher Activision have its non-exclusive license to produce games using this IP revoked by the film production studios responsible.
Oh, Ewan? Can I buzz back
in? Yes, Ewan. Yeah, you can now.
Is this 007 First Light?
It is 007 first.
Yeah!
Wow. Congratulations. Well done. Look at him go.
Yeah. Look at him go. He's got some points on the board.
In honor of Brody, who I don't even know is still alive, these are all his fantasy critic picks. I thought I would do them.
I'm sorry, but you can't tell me that Brody knows a thing or two about Fire Emblem.
I didn't say any of that. I just said that he's
picked. No. But like he's picked it knowing that there's, you know, a bunch of Fire Emblem fans out there gonna ready to pop this game up. But I reckon he would be equally as stumped on the episode if he was having to face that. Anyhow, I don't know why I'm going after Brody. He has been battling some serious cold. That's uncalled for. Hang on. I nearly ended the show, but James, I have a trivia question for you.
Cool. Hit me.
Harry, have you been on the show since we started doing these trivia questions?
Yeah,
okay. All right. Yeah. I do have multiple choice questions for
you. That's so nice
of you. And you have a choice of franchise as well. You can have a Metroid question. You could have a Resident Evil question. Or
as a treat.
You could have a Highgarde question.
I would like a Resident Evil. Oh,
Highgarde's tempting, isn't it?
Nah, I don't know anything. I don't remember anything about Highgarde besides you can buy
I was gold. Banking on that.
Yeah. Let's go Resident Evil. Thanks, Yui.
Okay, Resident Evil. In Resident Evil 2, if you combine gunpowder and high-grade gunpowder white, what ammo type do you get? Is it A, submachine gun ammo, B, acid rounds, C, shotgun shells, or D, mag ammo? The ingredients again were gunpowder and high-grade gunpowder white.
It's definitely not shotgun. Shotgun is yellow and gunpowder. I know that much.
Cannot confirm nor deny.
No. Ewan.
You've only played this game like 20 times.
I literally just played it like 2 weeks, like a week ago as well. But I didn't use this character. Fuck. So it's either submachine gun.
I deliberately all picked ammo types that had some sort of combination of gunpowder and high-grade gunpowder, just different colors.
Yeah, that's really nice of you. So I'm just going to guess. I'm just going to YOLO it.
Roll the dice. You got a 25% chance.
Can you tell me the colors? Can you tell me the colors of gunpowder that are available?
There was white, and there was yellow, and there was. I can have a look. Hang on, one sec. I don't know why I'm giving you this extra info. No, because then you'll likely find the answer. Don't you dare touch that keyboard.
Hands are up.
One sec here. Yellow, white. I think it's just the two.
And what are the options? Sorry. Submachine gun.
Mag.
Okay. Submachine gun ammo. Yeah. Acid rounds. Shotgun shells. Mag ammo. Those are your four options.
Mag ammo.
Is the incorrect answer.
Fake
fan. Is acid rounds. I'm glad I stumped you. Do we want the Highgarde question just for shits and gigs?
Okay, quick. Hurry up.
In Highgarde, the large sword in the capture the flag phase of the game that initiates a raid is called A, Gatebreaker, B, Stormbringer, C, Shieldbreaker, or D, Domesplitter.
B.
Stormbringer?
Yeah. No, it's A.
No, it's not A either. It's C, Shieldbreaker, was the correct
answer. For
the best,
answer. Then.
Yeah. all right, with that then, the scoring holds. James on 8, Shannon on 6, myself moving up to 4, and Harry, yourself moving up to 2 points. Brody bringing up the rear then on 1 point. But with that, let's bring an end to what was this week's episode of the Press Start podcast. Subscribe to us on Listener or the podcast service of your choice. Follow us at press.au and visit the site at press.com.au. We've been joined today by Harry.
Yes, you can follow me on socials at Harry_Callow.
Also joining us today, it was James.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at JamesATJAMZ or Blue Sky. I think I'm Jamzy, JAMZY.
I think it's verbatim what you said yesterday, last episode, as well. I've been your host, Ewan. You can follow me on socials at Ewan_Roxborough. We'll be back again next week. But until then, happy gaming.
Bye.
Bye.